Welcome to Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations. I'm your host, Tim Friedman, joined by local rock and roll expert Frank Ost. Frankie, welcome back.
Great to be with you.
It's season three. We're moving on through episode 10. Van Morrison, our featured artist this week, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee. We've already gone through our lists of Rock Hall inductees over the years, and now Frankie and I are going to be the champion of the cause for artists or musicians, duos, whatever, that need to get in. It's called Two Should Get In. And I'll start. One of them, I think, should be NXS. Michael Hutchins, who passed away, of course, but they jumped out of the gate with The One Thing and Don't Change, Shabu Shaba, great album cover,
yep.
Great videos. They matched they're out of the perfect time in the 80s with the videos and very cool stuff coming out of that band all the way through the early to mid-90s, and then it kind of ended, but that's not unusual for a band with 13, 14, 15 years in the bank. I think NXS is deserving to get in for that album and the other stuff they did.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. They were one of the few bands that I was still buying fresh CDs from
into the 90s.
And I can say that about very few bands,
but they
were one of them.
I was buying some new stuff, but there were very few, maybe James Taylor or an Eric Clapton here and there.
Right.
But usually it was something new. And
exactly.
It was something alternative for me, and we'll get into that with our download discoveries. But NXS, for sure, I loved their stuff into the 90s. They were really good. What do you have?
Kind of from the same era, a man by the name of Billy Idol.
Billy Idol.
You might remember him. He began as the lead singer for the British punk rock band Generation X, then kind of became the face of the MTV-driven Second British Invasion. Just to give you an idea of the fact that he did sell some records, he had 8 top 50 albums here in the States. 3 of them went to top 10, 4 platinum, 1 gold, 9 top 40 singles, and 4 of them were in the top 10, including the number 1 remake of the classic Tommy James and the Shondells, Money Money. Fantastic stuff. Another one of the great rock and roll voices. Biggest influence was on the burgeoning video market. White Wedding, Eyes Without a Face, Rebel Yell, with that classic rock voice and trademark sneer, soon became ubiquitous on MTV.
And the blonde hair, the spiky blonde hair.
Absolutely.
Don't forget that.
Over the years, he was nominated for 10 MTV Music Awards and even 3 Grammys.
Yeah, he checks all the boxes for me, too. I love Billy Idol and still do, and his videos were great. They're timeless. When you get to see videos anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
But hopefully he'll get his call someday.
Hope so.
Well, Frankie, by now, of course, Charlie Watts passed away, the Rolling Stones drummer at age 80. Last week, he stepped away from the band not too long ago due to medical reasons. He passed away peacefully in his sleep, according to his family, who was there by his side when he passed away last week. Don't know what that's going to do to the upcoming No Filter Tour shows. Of course, the one in Cleveland was canceled, but they did have other dates planned, including one in Detroit and Pittsburgh and a couple of other dates added in L.A. and Vegas and whatnot. So I don't know how that's going to impact the upcoming tour or if they're even going to do it, but that's sad news indeed. He will be missed. He was with Rolling Stones since 1963. All right, concert calendar time, Frankie. We've already run down some of the cancellations that have already taken place, postponements because of COVID. Garth Brooks and Stevie Nicks we talked about.
Of course.
Mark Cohn also, that was at the Kent stage. He's also canceled some dates throughout Ohio and Michigan. Alan Parsons is not going to be touring now. He's postponed that tour, which was supposed to be coming to the Cleveland area.
Really?
Florida Georgia Line, Nine Inch Nails also. Lynyrd Skynyrd, you'll recall, one of their members tested positive just before that Pro Football Hall of Fame concert a couple of weeks ago. So they've also canceled other upcoming tour dates in Alabama, Mississippi, and in Georgia. And Aerosmith already postponed their 50th anniversary tour, which was set to begin last year. They were scheduled for this year, and now it's pushed back to 2022. But some of the show's still cooking. In September at Blossom Music Center, Wednesday, September 8th, Alanis Morissette will come to town. Next night, the 9th, Doobie Brothers and Michael McDonald. And September 25th, on Saturday night, good night for it, Jimmy Buffett's Live on the Flipside Tour comes to town. Keep in mind, you'll need to show proof of vaccination or negative COVID test to attend. You want to check out that Blossom Music website for more information. I'm not sure how that's going to work logistically right now. Kent Stage, Sunday, September 12th, Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues will be coming. MGM Northfield Park. Now, keep in mind, you do not need to wear a mask if you've been fully vaccinated at this venue at the center stage at Northfield Park. You do have to be at least 21 to enter. Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo will be coming to town September 18th. That's a Saturday night. Goodyear Theater in Akron, still on the Bachman Cummings concert this coming Thursday, September 2nd. Today in rock history, August 30th, 1965, Bob Dylan released the album Highway 61 Revisited. 1969, over Labor Day weekend, August 30th began the three-day Texas International Pop Festival, not the Atlanta and not Woodstock, but it opened at the Dallas Motor Speedway, featuring a lot of the same bands. Chicago Transit Authority, Santana, Janis Joplin, Zeppelin was there.
Wow.
The Nas, Todd Rundgren, Canned Heat, Herbie Mann, Spirit, Sweetwater, Grand Funk Railroad kicked off things on Saturday, August 30th, and wrapped up with Tony Joe White on Monday, 10 years after, performed just before Tony Joe White. And a lot of the artists performed all 3 days, including Grand Funk and Chicago and B.B. King and Herbie Mann. They played all 3 days of that festival.
Yeah, everybody, cool? I think, at that time was looking for lightning to strike again and there to be another Woodstock. And, you know, you can't, it's hard, yeah, it's but hard there were still a lot of great concerts.
And how? The Doors announced they were disbanding in 1973, last week we mentioned how they asked Paul Rogers to step in for Jim Morrison. He said
that's
no.
That's right.
And so they just disbanded. 1989, Billy Joel fired his manager and his former brother-in-law for discrepancies. He was managing his money poorly and would sue his ex-brother-in-law for $90 million.
Good grief.
1990, Paul Anka, born in Ottawa, Canada, became a naturalized citizen of the United States. But while these ceremonies were taking part, he got his car towed. 1991, tragedy struck as Dottie West, the singer. Remember the song she did with Kenny Rogers, What Are We Doing in Love, 1981? Good tune.
Okay.
She was critically injured on her way to perform at the Grand Ole Opry. The country music star died. Car accident would take her life 5 days later.
Mm.
1993, Billy Joel again became the very first musical act on the new CBS show, Late Night with David Letterman.
Wow. What it's hard to believe.
What was the last one? Was it Springsteen or something, Letterman? Very last one he had?
I don't know.
Oh, I know. It's Foo Fighters. That's David Letterman's favorite band. And being inducted into the Rock Hall in just a couple months. Birthdays. Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein in 1818. Mary was born in 1797. Fred McMurray was born in 1908. Ted Williams, the Splendid Splinter, 1918. John Phillips of Mamas and Papas was born in 1935. Whitesnake's Mick Moody was born in 1950. And this week, our featured artist Van Morrison would turn 76 the next day, August 31st.
That's right.
1945. When in Wonder Time, Frankie, Ram Jam. Remember, the summer of 1977 brought us songs like I'm in You and Everything by Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, yeah.
Black Betty, written by the legendary Lead Belly. The New York City band never did chart a follow-up song. You know, Ram Jam, everybody's heard that song so many times. The song was actually produced by Jeffrey Katz and Jerry Kasanets, who created the concept of bubblegum music.
Really?
Back in the 60s, they produced Yummy, 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 1, 2, 3, Red Light, Simon Says, and Gimme, Gimme Good Lovin'.
Okay.
At the request of Neil Bogart, who at the time was working at Buddha Records, and then Neil Bogart, get the last name, would form his own record label called Casablanca.
That's right.
And that featured a lot of disco artists like Donna Summer and the Village People, but also had other artists like the Hudson Brothers and Kiss.
That's right.
Neil Bogart died of cancer at only 39 years old.
Wow.
So Black Betty, Ram Jam, you remember that song?
Oh, Black Betty. I do. One of those that you get in your head and you can't forget for a while.
You can't forget it. The Easy Beats, Frankie, in 1965, created the song Friday on My Mind. They were from Australia, and they had a number 16 hit here, number one on the Dutch chart, and in their native Australia. Still a staple of the classic rock, you know, the Weekend, Blast Off, the Weekend, Kickoffs. You hear Friday on My Mind every week, don't they?
And it's a great tune. It's one of those tunes, if it didn't exist, somebody would have to invent it because it's just such a perfect weekend song.
Now, The Cure, Kind of did so with on Friday I'm in Love, 1992. Right. Mm-hmm. I love The Cure. And I like Easy Beats, Friday in My Mind. Notice I didn't say I love it. I like it because after every Friday at 5 o'clock, if you're listening to the radio, and I kind of like to do, I still like to listen to Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock. I feel
sure.
The whole weekend's in front of me, just like I feel a little trepidatious, a little worried on Sunday night around 6 o'clock. I feel like I need to do my homework before the 60 Minutes logo comes on.
I don't think that anybody ever gets rid of that feeling.
I know. by the way, the Easy Beats did have a follow-up called St. Louis, and it topped out at number 100.
Wow.
Good thing they have 100 singles, right?
Just barely.
Number one albums from 1973, Seventh Sojourn, The Moody Blues, Carryover from 1972, started out the year, and then Carly Simon's No Secrets, you know, You're So Vain, The Right Thing to Do. That's a good album, one of the tops of the year. It spent 5 weeks at the top of the charts in 1973.
Yeah, that's when she really broke big, yeah.
War, The World is a Ghetto.
Another band that broke out of the pack at that point, yeah.
Elton John's Don't Shoot Me, I'm Only the Piano Player. That was just before Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
Yeah, and he was really on a run there.
He was.
The year before was Honky Chateau, now Don't Shoot Me, and of course, coming up a little bit later is...
The double album smash.
Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
Don't Shoot Me had Daniel on it. Eric Weisberg and Steve Mandel had 3 weeks at the top with Dueling Banjos, the soundtrack basically from the movie... Diana Ross, the soundtrack to Lady Sings the Blues was number one. Alice Cooper, Billion Dollar Babies. I think we'll be talking about that in a little while, won't
Fantastic.
We?
Fantastic.
Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon. That was the one and only week that was on the top of the charts. Yet, it set a record for most weeks on the charts.
I never realized it only had 1 week as the number one record.
Yeah, I think it's still on the charts all these years later.
It could be.
Elvis Presley's Aloha from Hawaii via satellite. That's so funny, isn't it? Zeppelin, Houses of the Holy. Oh, great album. The Blue Album from the Beatles came out. You know, they're putting out the Red Album, the Blue Album, Live at the Hollywood Bowl.
That's right.
That was one of their many compilation albums, but that was a good one, the double album set. Paul McCartney, Red Rose Speedway, 3 weeks at the top. And George Harrison, Living in the Material World, that featured Gimme Love, and that was... number one for 5 weeks and replaced Paul McCartney. Chicago 6 was actually 3 weeks at the top following George Harrison.
That's right.
And then they came back with Chicago 6 again after Jethro Tull's A Passion Play. Now, Chicago 6 featured Just You and Me, another one of the Jimmy Pankow written songs. Feeling Stronger was written by him and Peter Cetera. Allman Brothers, Brothers and Sisters, 5 weeks at the top of the charts. The Stones, Goat's Head Soup, 4 weeks.
What
wow. Think of? That's not one of your favorites.
No, I think that's probably one of the worst Stones from their classic period. Probably one of their worst albums.
Didn't it have Do-Do-Do-Do Heartbreak around it?
It did have Do-Do-Do, and maybe one of their sweetest ballads in Angie.
Yeah.
But after those two, it dies off really quick. There was a lot of filler on that album.
Elton John, no filler on this double album set. Goodbye Yellow Brick Road finished out 73, spending the final 8 weeks at the top of the charts. Great tunes on there, all of them.
Boy, he just hit his prime, and 1973 was incredible for him.
It was the year of Elton John.
Absolutely.
Soon to be followed up by Caribou and so many other great things by Elton John. But for me, 73 was his absolute peak.
Absolutely.
Top singles, 1973. Diana Ross came in at number 10 with Touch Me in the Morning. And that was a string of number ones for her.
Yeah.
Carly Simon, You're So Vain, backed up by Mick Jagger.
Yeah,
who
is may or may not be about or partially about.
Yeah. Warren Beatty, it's been told. Billy Preston, Will It Go Round in Circles. That's a good tune.
That's a great tune.
Elton John, Croc, A Dial Rock, came in at number 7. Now, Kris Kristofferson, did you know the song Why Me?
Don't remember it.
You knew who Kris Kristofferson was.
Yes,
though.
I do.
He had that real low voice in Why Me. It's a
wrote a lot of songs, I know that.
Song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't know this until I listened recently to an episode of American Top 40 featuring Casey Kasem, where you can still find a lot of information out. Why Me spent like dozens of weeks on the chart, and it was one of the slowest climbing songs of the year.
Right.
It spent so much time in the charts that they had to give it its due.
It kind of,
just because of its staying power, Why Me was number 6. My Love, Paul McCartney and Wings. Marvin Gaye, Let's Get It On.
Mm, yeah.
Roberta Flack, Killing Me Softly. Jim Croce's Bad, Bad Leroy Brown, of course, by the end of 73, had already passed away. Time in a Bottle was a big one. I Got a Name. You know, they were releasing songs posthumously, but Bad, Bad Leroy Brown was topping the charts.
That was
right,
a fun
September
tune.
73.
Yep.
Tony Orlando and Dawn, number one. Tie a Yellow Ribbon Around the Old Oak Tree.
That was the number one.
For the entire year.
Yeah.
I think it spent like 6 weeks at the top of the charts in the spring.
And of course, now it's come to mean anybody who comes home from anywhere gets the Yellow Ribbon, you know, around the tree.
Album covers, 1973. Frankie's got a couple of good ones, and we actually mentioned both of them.
Yes, we did.
In our rundown, didn't we? What's the first one you have? I think it's Zeppelin, isn't it?
Yeah. Very little known band called Led Zeppelin, and their number one hit album from that year, Houses of the Holy. The first cover by the band to be designed by, and you've mentioned them before, Hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And was based on a photograph taken at Giant's Causeway in Northern Ireland.
Hmm.
Fans have long speculated about the meaning of this cryptic image of naked golden-haired children crawling around an apocalyptic landscape.
Yeah, I don't think that would work these days.
Yeah, the concept was based on an Arthur C. Clarke novel, Childhood End, where hundreds of millions of Earth's children gathered to be taken off into space.
Yeah.
The photo shoot featured two children, Stefan and Samantha Gates. It was a frustrating affair that was done over the case over the course of 10 days because it rained every day. So they couldn't get the desired effects and because of the constant rain and clouds. The photos of the two children were taken in black and white and then multi-printed to create the effect of 11 individuals that you see on the album. So it was just
that.
Two of them, but they turned into 11.
Yeah, kind of like overdubbing.
Exactly. The inner gatefold photograph was taken at Dunluce Castle nearby the causeway. The cover is currently banned from Facebook for violation of community standards. Of course, that's the naked children that are on there.
But is Nirvana's album?
That I don't know.
Hmm. Oh, by the way, there is news about that. The four-month-old, Spencer Eldon is his name, now 30 years old, is suing Nirvana for child pornography, claiming that his legal guardians were never asked to sign a release for the photo itself. And so he's suing, and we'll find out where that lawsuit goes. Houses of the Holy.
Yeah.
Zeppelin. Good album, too.
Yeah, and it was the first by the group to have an explicit title, and it wasn't named Led Zeppelin.
Yeah,
it was
1, 2, 3.
Yeah, it was the first one to have a title, but neither the band's name nor the album title is printed on the sleeve.
Nor does Houses of the Holy appear on that album.
Exactly.
It's a song.
So manager Peter Grant did allow Atlantic Records to finally add a wraparound title band to the U.S. copy to add this information.
What else you have?
Well, second one is another number one smash from that year, done by Alice Cooper, the group.
Mm-hmm.
They were just becoming Alice Cooper, the rock star. The original vinyl cover of Billion Dollars Babies was a work of art in itself. The cover was stylized like a green snakeskin money wallet,
mm-hmm,
with curved edges and an embossed effect on the snake scales and coin-like emblems and diamonds around it. Open the gatefold wallet and you were presented with an oversized billion-dollar bill and perforated cards on the left featuring portraits of each band member and stage photos. Like the sort of personal photos one would keep in a wallet of your wife or children. Remove the cards and you discovered the album credits. The inner sleeve featured lyrics on one side, and on the other, a photo of the band standing all in white behind Alice holding a baby with classic Alice Cooper makeup. He was surrounded by $1 million of real money and white rabbits. When the $1 million was brought to the photo shoot by armored car, and when they recounted at the end, they came up $10 short. There is a law in the United States which requires FBI approval on all reproduction of photos of U.S. currency.
Really?
And it took some negotiation for them to be allowed to use the photograph after the government agency decided you couldn't tell whether it was real money or not.
So you have Houses of the Holy by Zeppelin and Alice Cooper, Billion Dollar Babies.
That's right.
Download Discovery. It's a brand new feature we do. I really like it. Frankie's got one, and I have one. I'm going to start with the Psychedelic Furs, one of my favorite new wave synth pop bands of the 80s. The Psychedelic Furs came out with Mirror Moves in 1984, featured a couple of songs. One, called Heaven, was not released in the United States, but it was released and did very well overseas, especially in New Zealand and in the UK. And they also had a song called The Ghost in You, which is a really cool, peppy little number. The album only hit number 43 here. It was certified gold eventually. And number 5, though, in New Zealand, The Ghost in You, the song hit number 59 here in the States in the spring. It was used in the Adam Sandler films, 51st Dates and Wedding Singer. You're not going to find it on either soundtrack, though. It's one of those movie music fillers. And there's many, many songs on there that don't appear in the soundtrack but do in the movie. Heaven, you know, did number 29 in the UK, was not released, but the album was produced by a fellow named Keith Forsey, who you may know. He did some movie music, like co-writing and co-producing The Heat Is On, that Glenn Frey sang.
Oh, okay,
from,
yeah,
Beverly Hills Cop. He also co-wrote Flashdance by Irene Cara, and Don't You Forget About Me from The Breakfast Club, Simple Minds. Remember
nice.
That song? By the way, Simple
Great
Minds,
tune.
They turned down the song originally, and so Billy Idol also turned it down. As did Brian Ferry. Once both of those guys and many others said no to it, Simple Minds said, all right, we'll do it. Became a gigantic hit.
Absolutely.
So Forsey co-wrote that song. You know, he asked Glenn Frey to sing it. He sent the demo to Glenn, and Glenn Frey, all right, I'll do it. He sang the lead and the backing vocals in one day for $15,000.
Really?
So the song Ghost in You and Heaven from Mirror Moves, 1984. What you have, Frankie?
Well, this is another album that not a lot of people are familiar with these days. It's a band called Spirit, 12 Dreams of Dr. Sardonicus. And yes, it's psychedelic. Peaked at only number 63 here in February of 1971. And the only reason I know about it is I got to give a shout out to my sister because she brought it home from college that year.
She did a lot of that, didn't she?
She did. And boy, I found it and...
You
put
it
on, and I kind of stole it, and then I bought my own copy later.
And you gave her the old one back?
Exactly.
Yeah. You can't give her the new one.
No way.
Now, it's funny how your sister did not bring home a lot of stuff from Tony Orlando or the Carpenters or Sammy Davis Jr.
No. It was one of the really last psychedelic albums, being in 1971. Maybe that's why it didn't find any traction here. Got a lot of classic tunes on there. Prelude, Nothing to Hide. It's kind of a jazz rock opener, classic ballad in Nature's Way. And the killer album cut that's still played today is Mr. Skin.
Yeah.
The 12 tracks on it weave kind of a sci-fi concept album. And what seemed to be one of the first glam rock records, the members, Randy California, Mark Andes, Jay Ferguson, names you've heard on this podcast before.
Right. Mark Andes.
Definitely.
Went on to be in Firefall and Heart. And
here they are all out together for the last time. This is the last time that these members would get together and record. Listening to it recently, it still sounds as fresh and as exciting as it did 50 years ago now.
Wow. And Randy California, what a great name for an artist.
Fantastic
Whether
name.
Whether he's a musician or like a painter artist.
Yeah. And he
great,
was
cool
he was
sounding
a,
name.
He was a wonderful slide guitarist.
Featured artist time, Frankie, the native of Belfast, Northern Ireland, born in 1945, Sir George Ivan Morrison. We know him as Van Morrison.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised when I saw that he was a Sir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll tell you why in a little while.
Okay.
His father, George, had amassed a huge record collection during his time here in the States, and so Van began listening to songs from Muddy Waters, Leadbelly, Woody Guthrie, Charlie Parker, put his own band together, At age 12, his father bought him his first guitar just a year earlier. They actually started playing some gigs in local movie houses, and he did play saxophone and harmonica, and then they got a group known as Them together.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely a roots band there.
Yeah. It was taken from a horror movie of the 50s, Them. He moved from Belfast to London in 1964, at the very beginning of the British invasion. So Van the Man was on his way playing guitar, keyboard, saxophone, and harmonica, soul music, R&B, what's called Celtic soul, signed to Decca Records, along with The Stones and many, many others. Two-record deal. 18 top 40 songs in the States, great success in UK and Ireland. Has done very well here, too. Live performances were described as inspired and transcendental.
Yeah.
Them. Remember the song Gloria?
Mm-hmm.
Been covered by many artists, including The Doors. That's a really cool version, by the way, either one. So the summer of 65, also Here Comes the Night, Mystic Eyes, Gloria was released a year later around the time of their breakup. So they didn't last very long, did they?
No, just a year or two.
Solo career was off and running in 1967 with Brown Eyed Girl, hit number 10 here in the States. Then in 1971, early in the year, number 9 hit Domino.
And that's right.
Wild Night, Tupelo Honey, one of my favorites. And then in 1972,
that's a great tune.
I love that song. Jackie Wilson Said and Wavelength, 1978. The album's Moondance, 1970, first million-selling album, reached number 29 in the States. It displayed a much more optimistic approach, unlike Astro Weeks, which was his second album.
Yeah, and which is considered by most as one of the great albums of all time.
Yeah.
I have listened to it. Not quite sure I'd go there with it, but it's certainly a great album.
Yeah, Moondance and It Stoned Me, which I always thought sounded a little like the band for some reason. Shorter songs, too, on Moondance. Brand New Day was the longest track, a little over 5 minutes, whereas Astro Weeks featured few songs that topped the 7 minute mark and one that was nearly 10 minutes long.
Exactly.
So you had to invest a lot of your time, but the critics loved it. They gave it an A. They called it brilliant and catchy and poetic. John Landau, who at the time wrote for Rolling Stone, would go on to have do big things with Bruce Springsteen.
That's right.
Loved his voice. Marvelous Night for a Moondance. Fantabulous
it's
Night.
It's a really good song, too.
Even the hippies loved it.
Yeah.
As they were falling into domestic complacency, the critics were saying. By 1970, they kind of were.
Yeah.
They were moving on to other things. They realized, you know what? Better get a job.
They had to get on with their lives, yes.
His band Into the Street Choir, November 1970, featured Domino, first cut, first side. Blue Money recorded at a tiny church in Woodstock, New York.
Yeah.
It originally intended to be an album of only a cappella music, then they added some bands later on, some backup stuff. So Tupelo Honey, that's a great, great album. The song Tupelo Honey is wonderful. Wild Nights, they moved from New York to California, Van did, and picked up some West Coast session musicians at the time.
Right.
But you know who played organ on Tupelo Honey? Ted Templeman.
Oh, okay.
He was also then an A&R guy for Warner Brothers who would discover and produce Doobie Brothers and then would do the same thing with the Van Halen band in the late 70s. So he played organ on Tupelo Honey, Ted Templeman. But when it was time to promote the album, Van developed a fear of performing in front of huge audiences.
Yeah, I'd seen that also where, you know, he was used to small kind of 100, 200, 300 seat venues, and now he was going to, you know, thousands of seats.
In fact, he announced to his fellow band members, I'm done. I'm not going to do live performances anymore. That was in the dressing room prior to a show. I don't know where the show was, but they said, say, Van, how about just going back to a smaller club or two, kind of getting your feet under you again, and things were fine after that. Fine and dandy. They were back on the road again and on tour in 1972. Have you ever seen Van Morrison in concert? Does he ever come around?
No, I haven't seen him, and I don't think he did come here very often.
I wonder what kind of night that would be. Would it be a wild night? You know, would you still be sitting there midnight listening to a rendition of something from seeing Dominic's preview?
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of night it would be.
And I don't know either. It kind of, a little bit of hit and miss as far as how he is in concert.
Yeah. So, St. Dominic's Preview, 1972. In 1973, Hard Nosed the Highway. 74 came Veedon Fleece, and then he took a few years off. He's kind of tired. You know, it's a grind. a period of transition in 1977, his ninth studio album already, only seven cuts on, and some were actually recorded a couple of years earlier. Wavelength in 1978, more of a pop rock sound, electric guitars, new backing band, including the new lead guitarist Bobby Tench, no relation to Benmont Tench.
Okay.
Benmont was born in Gainesville, Florida, as you know, and Bobby was born in UK. Bobby also worked with Humble Pie, Jeff Beck, Ginger Baker. So they were off and running again. Wavelength, pretty good album, 1978. Into the Music features one of my favorites, Bright Side of the Road.
Oh, yeah, very much.
So he had a lot of hits, you know, Crazy Love, Moondance, Bright Side of the Road, Did You Get Healed, which is a great tune, and It Stoned Me, Someone Like You. You know, just really mellow songs, great song to maybe, I don't know, cap off the night on a Saturday night, you know, by the fireplace or something. Or
absolutely.
Maybe a weekend or a long weekend. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, Songwriters Hall of Fame in 1993. He did not take part, though. He became the first living inductee not to attend his own induction ceremony.
Oh.
Not the last, either.
Yeah, not the last.
Robbie Robertson of the band. Remember, we talked about that with And It Stoned Me. It does sound like the band. He accepted the award of the Rock Hall for Van, but Van Morrison did attend the Irish Music Hall of Fame induction in 1999, presented to him by Boomtown Rats' Bob Geldof.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, Band-Aid and Live Aid. And
Do they know it's Christmas?
Yeah, yeah, do they know it's Christmas? I don't like Mondays.
Oh, Bob Geldof. Definitely.
Yeah. So he's had a lot of good albums. I had no idea Someone Like You was featured in the film American Sniper. As we moved into the 80s, Van was still putting out albums pretty much every year. He's a hard worker, you know, Beautiful Vision, Sense of Wonder, Poetic Champions, which featured Did You Get Healed, and Queen of the Slipstream. Not easy to say.
Not easy.
But great tune. Then came Irish Heartbeat, Avalon Sunset. Even in the 2000s, he hadn't been slowing down. He put out something called The Three Chords and the Truth. Came out 4 years ago, and his latest album is over 2 hours in length. It's 28 tracks, a double album called Latest Record Project Volume 1. It's Van's 42nd studio album, came out in May. So far, it's met with average or mixed reviews. It's doing okay in the UK, number 5 on that list, number 48 in its homeland of Ireland, and only 182 on the top 200 album chart here in the States.
Yeah, I know he's been talking about getting back on the road, too, or doing gigs, as he calls it.
Gigs.
He doesn't call it going on the road. He kind of says he likes to do 2 or 3 concerts, you know, in a week's time or something like that.
Maybe in a pub. You and I are sitting around
exactly.
with our wives in Ireland or London, someplace in the UK, having a pint, and Van Morrison's there playing.
It would be fun.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
He doesn't need a lot of backup, does he?
No, absolutely not.
3 songs appear in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's 500 songs that shaped rock. They are Brown Eyed Girl, Moondance, which makes sense, and Madam George from the album Astral Weeks.
Astral Weeks,
how great the album was. Knighted for his services to the music industry and to tourism in Northern Ireland. He's won 2 Grammy Awards, been nominated 5 other times, as we said, into the Rock Hall and Songwriters Hall of Fame, which, especially the Songwriters Hall of Fame, that's a real feather in one's cap.
Don't you think? Absolutely. And I think of all the Hall of Fames, that might be the most important one, just the songwriters, yeah.
So that's Van Morrison, our featured artist, who I would like to see at a pub in
Ireland. Oh, absolutely.
Or the UK on a Wednesday night or a Saturday night or
definitely
something. Shows up with his guitar.
Small venue, yeah.
Small venue place.
Yeah.
That would be fun. You got to be in the right frame of mind to listen to his music, I think.
Right.
Not a lot of hard charging stuff there.
No.
But if you want to listen to those songs we talked about, from Moondance to Did Ye Get Healed, they're all good tunes.
Oh, absolutely.
Some of them a mite overplayed, but I like them just the same. Some I like more than others.
That's right.
Next time on Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations featuring Frank Ost, we're going to talk about a group we wanted to hear more from, and that's the Guess Who.
Oh, definitely.
Good string of songs, and kind of like CCR, had some B-sided hits, and if they had separated them all, they might have lasted a little bit longer. I think it was like 1965 to 74, maybe.
Something like that, yeah.
And then Burton Cummings struck out on his own. Didn't do so well. He had, like, Stand Tall or something.
That's right.
In 1976, and didn't hear much from him after that, unless you're in Branson, Missouri or something.
Exactly.
But I really would have liked to have heard more from the Guess Who. I know they were off to do other things, and, of course, BTO started up not too long after that. So that will be our featured artist next time around. Thanks for listening. Frank, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate your input, as always. This is Tim Friedman, 70s Rock Conversations. We'll see you next time.